Hey everyone, it's Michael. Welcome to this special bonus episode of the Icon Podcast. You may know that over on Patreon, we've been doing a series called The Misfits, and that is with myself, J. Brian Craig, Reggie Hearn. We've been talking through just some of the struggles and challenges and realities faced by those of us who, you know, deal with things like being an introvert, being shy, depression, anxiety, mental health issues, even some physical health issues. And so we've been having a conversation going through those issues. And this week we released our third episode on Patreon, but we thought we wanted to give a chance to our whole audience to hear this. And we think you'll really be encouraged by this series, find it very helpful. And we wanted to give you a chance to listen to it and then consider supporting the podcast and listening to the previous two episodes and the future episodes in this series over at Patreon. If you'd like to do that and support the podcast, you can start as low as $5 and go up as high as you want. But you can access that at patreon.com/iconpodcast. Again, that's patreon.com, or I should say www.patreon.com/iconpodcast. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to The Misfits, the Patreon series here on the Icon Podcast. I'm Michael Burns, and I'm with Brian Craig and Reggie Hearn. And we were just having a fascinating conversation before we started recording. And so I said, hey, let's pause this and pick it up. We got talking about live streaming and podcasting and doing services during COVID and all of that kind of stuff. And Brian, you brought up a great point, and it's one, you were bringing up the way that as an introvert, you kind of, there were a lot of aspects of COVID that you, and particularly the quarantines, that you didn't mind. And I want to dive into that a little bit here at the beginning before we move on to some other stuff, because in a lot of ways, that's really the impetus for what we're doing today, at least from my end, was that. So how was the quarantine for you guys, you know, as like, you know, your own personal makeup, just how did the quarantine strike you? How'd they hit you? How'd you fare through those things?
Well, you know, for me, I feel bad saying this because, you know, there was so many, that hundreds of thousands or millions of people dying, you know, so that, you know, that it's, but I loved it.
Right.
I mean, I loved the quarantine part of it because my kids were stuck with me, you know, and so we had every, you know, all our meals together, and we're hanging out and watching Netflix. I think, what was the show at the time? It was
Tiger King was a big one.
Tiger King. Yes. We were watching Tiger King. And then we were like, should we be watching Tiger King?
That was so horrific. You look back now and you're like, what were we all thinking?
I just heard some new thing about Carol Baskin's, like they found her or something. They, you know, that woman that supposedly got killed or what? I don't know.
That killed her husband something, right?
Killed her husband. Yeah. And then they found her husband just recently or something. I can't remember what it is. Something new in the news. My kids were telling me, but I really liked, and for church, we meet normally at we were meeting at the time in two separate groups, both in rented facilities, and no one here in Southern California would rent to us. We even tried to I mean, we, you know, nobody would rent to us. So for a while we were just live streaming. It started with just my little family, and my son is kind of uniquely positioned because he's really one of my sons, my middle son, he's really good with technology. He had actually started our live stream maybe a year or two before COVID. So we were sort of set up with the technology for it. And so it started out every week. Our service was just my family, you know? Right. So it was, my son is doing the live stream and the camera and the switcher and all that. And I'm doing the music with my guitar, and my daughter, who's a singer, is singing along, you know, playing her ukulele. It was just like, it was just kind of fun, you know? And then as we were able to, we expanded that and we started meeting in our garage. And so we would just have every week, we'd have a different family group from the church come over, and we were able to open up our garage door so people could sit in the alley and be outside and be social distance and stuff, but still have. So anyway, my point is, as an introvert, I just loved, that was like my favorite form of church I'd ever been a part of. Because it wasn't just total isolation on a computer, but it was a real small kind of group, and just the right level of intimacy. And I just really loved, I kind of loved it. And I loved being with my family, and my family kind of being stuck with me. And so, and we had already kind of gone through some family crises and some really difficult things a couple years earlier, some of the hardest, kind of darkest times of my life. And so that was not a dark time, whereas for a lot of people, you know, when they talk about 2020, it was like the darkest time, but it wasn't a dark time. I mean, it was dark in that, you know, some of the stuff we were reckoning with as a country, you know, the racial stuff and George Floyd and that stuff was really dark. And even just in our church, seeing the need still for a lot more, and even just anyway, so that was, there was a lot of darkness, yeah. Obviously, but the lockdown part of it, that part, I never felt isolated. I kind of actually loved it.
Well, that's, I identify with that. I understand that. And I think when the quarantines first hit and all of a sudden we had to be home and do everything from home, and rather than being just in and of itself, if you isolate that part of it, like you said, from all the bad stuff that was going on, I didn't mind it one bit. I was like, I've been training for this my whole life, or hoping for it. This is fantastic. Yeah. Now all of a sudden I have to stay home in my study by myself all day, and it's how exactly. I'm saving the world. Like, okay, exactly. I can do this.
It almost was like an excuse to get to do what I always wanted to do, like read books and work on music videos and you know, doing those, we're making these videos of people, you know, work on worships. I mean, I did so much stuff that I had always wanted to do, like with worship and video and doing, you know, and it's kind of like, now I can do it and not feel guilty.
Right. No, exactly. But what struck me through that, and I had already been teaching some, I'd done some lessons at School of Missions and stuff on introverts and how they were sometimes overlooked in the culture of churches and needed to be paid attention to, and you know, people with that felt similarly misfit with different things other than just being shy or introvert. But when that hit, what I noticed was how much of a struggle all the extroverts were having. Like, they were going crazy. Like, they're like, I can't stand the isolation in church, and I haven't church online, and I haven't seen people. And it just doesn't feel right. And I was like, well, welcome to our world, where we always feel out of sync with the church. Now, like, how does that feel? So, Reggie, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can, yes. Just to let people know, Reggie is on the road today. He's in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you're at a hotel that apparently doesn't have the greatest Wi-Fi. So we can't see you right now, but we can hear you, and hopefully we don't cut in and out too much, and you're able to participate. But any thoughts on the quarantines and COVID life before we move on?
Yeah, I think I can speak up for the extroverts. I don't think you heard me as you were describing how much the extroverts were struggling. I was saying, yep. You know, with me and my wife, I was playing for the South Bay Lakers at the time, and the season got cut short in 2020, probably the last like 5 weeks of the season. And we rode out the next couple months living in our studio suite at the Residence Inn in Los Angeles. And pretty much it was just her and me, which was fun. We played games. She baked cookies every night. I got fat. I tried to run along the streets of Los Angeles. That didn't last very long. But then we moved to Reno after a couple months. And during that time, it got pretty hard for me. So I think I'm more of a people person. As I've said before, I'm moving a little bit more towards introvert, but I'm still on the extroverted side of the spectrum. And so the pandemic was tough for me. You know, my wife was fine staying at home, just the two of us. And I, you know, got to a point where I started to feel a little bit stifled. Like, I can't really go see too many people. If I do, it needs to be outside, and then keep a distance while I'm outside. It's like, you know, I'm the type of guy that's dapping people up, giving people hugs, side hugs. So it was a harder time for me. And once COVID lifted and I could see people again and dap them up, like, that definitely helped me out a lot.
Nice. Ah, the good old days. Yes, yeah. Yes. And
did you say you were in what was the name of the team? South Bay. What was that? Our same area as I'm in.
Yeah. South Bay Lakers. So based in El Segundo.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's not far from me. I'm in Torrance. So I'm about 40 minutes from there. Yeah. That's cool.
See, Brian, you could be going to the South Bay Laker games and you didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Very high quality basketball.
They're at the Lakers practice facility. Go see the trophies.
I might have to check that out.
Yeah.
My son would probably love going, actually.
The G League is like tomorrow's stars today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a good way to sell it.
Well done, Michael. Well done. He's watched some advertisements.
Do they use that, Reggie?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a commercial with like Monica McNutt, the ESPN reporter and analyst right now.
I didn't even know that because I was going to demand like some recompense, you know, if they started using that. So, all right. So here's where we're at. We last time on The Misfits, I proposed some phrases to describe a healthy church culture that embraces people of all types. And I think I threw out originally six phrases, and I thought, we'll take an episode or two to discuss those. And as we got going, we had a really great discussion, and it became clear that probably we were going to get to one per episode. And by the time we got done talking in general, I now have eight instead of six. And the one we talked about last week was feeling considered or burdensome. And then where we left it off is we'd started a little bit, but I said next time we would talk about a culture where you are seen or invisible. And there's a couple things I typed out that you guys said last time, I think in relation to this, that I wanted to explore a little more. And each of you said one phrase that stuck out to me. Before we get to that, though, I will say that, you know, we're going through these markers of a church culture at the beginning. And looks like we're going to take 7 or 8 weeks to do that. And so I want to be clear that I'm not saying that those who are shy or introverted or anxious or dealing with depression or whatever don't need to, that there's not a certain point where we need to overcome some of those things and challenge some of those things and move beyond them and grow and stretch and learn to cope. I'm not saying all that. We'll get to those sorts of things and that side of the coin, but we're starting with the culture thing. So I just want to say at the beginning here of this episode that it's not like we're just all, this is all on the church and, you know, you can use it as an excuse to not stretch yourself at all. That's, of course, not what we're saying. But Reggie, let me start with you, because we were talking about, you know, a culture where we are seen or invisible. And you were talking last time about God seeing us and how important that was to you to recognize that, especially through mental health struggles and depression that you went through when you were a player in the NBA and so on. And so I want to just hear a little more about that, about the importance to you of God and others perhaps seeing us and what that means to you and why it's so important.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, we're all very, very complex beings, right? And I believe one of you brought up last time, I think it was Brian, the scripture about, you know, each heart knows its own sorrow, but also its own joy, something to that effect. And there is a uniqueness to each of us that, like, we all really want to be, you know, I think understood, validated. Those are synonyms that I would use for, like, being seen, being heard. And I think a lot of times it has to do with our burdens or our struggles. Like, we want to be seen in the sense of, like, I want you to understand how hard this has been for me. I want you to I don't want to be alone in it. And even if I just know that you understand and that you validate that this has been hard, that I think we all want that, need that. So like I was even thinking about this yesterday. Like I've wondered from time to time, the word understand, like, why does understand mean what it means? And I thought about, it just came to me yesterday. I'm like, okay, if I want you to understand me, I want you to stand under. And it's like, we feel these burdens. I want you to stand under this burden with me. I want you to see it. I want you to feel it for what it is and this struggle and, like, take it with me. And so that's the thing about Jesus. And the point I got to in my mental health is I used to think that God was, and I've talked to you before about this, Michael, had me on this tightrope of doing his will. If I go too far left or right, I could fall off and going right to hell. I've had this complete turnaround where it's like some of the things I encounter now, you know, some things that even people close to me may not understand. I know God gets it and he literally stands under it with me. He feels it. Like the scripture in Hebrews says, he's been tempted in every way. You know, he's felt our weakness, and it's just like, I picture him looking at me with loving eyes, like, I get it. You know, you're doing the best you can. I'm here. I'm with you. You're not alone. So to me, I think being seen connects with this idea of isolation, which we know goes way beyond physical. You can feel emotionally, mentally, spiritually, socially isolated. And we can feel that being in a room. I mean, I used to play basketball games feeling like I really just wanted to curl up into a ball in the fetal position on the court and didn't care what people thought. That's how I felt. I would play basketball. And, you know, that was before I went to the hospital. And so, you know, I didn't feel like anybody in that arena could get that. I didn't feel like there are only a few people that could get a glimpse of it. But finally now I understand, like, okay, God, he really gets it. He sees it. He stands under that burden. He stands under the struggle with me to carry it. So.
No, that's so good. I don't know how it never has occurred to me to kind of break down the word understand into the idea of standing under my experience and my struggles and what I'm going through. And that's really interesting. And as you were talking, I kind of jotted down the note, what does it mean for a church or a church culture to stand under our struggles and who we are with us? And so that's really interesting. Now, Brian, here's the phrase I wrote down for you from last episode. You were talking about the church can send the message that you should be okay and that there wasn't really space for not being okay because we have the Spirit and the Bible. And I wonder if you could expound on that thought a little more, because I thought that was really interesting, and especially in this realm of, you know, creating a culture where we feel either seen or invisible.
Yeah. Well, that's a deep question. I think it's something I've been wrestling with too, even lately. So my health, I'm in the middle of a health journey. I've got terminal brain cancer, glioblastoma, and I don't know how much time I have. You know, the typical, I'm coming up on a year of when my surgery was. It was right after the holidays, and I had a surgery to remove the tumor. I had chemotherapy. I wear this this device that creates an electrical field that tries to stop the cancer from regrowing. And you know, that causes a lot of reckoning, right? And a lot of wrestling with it affects my thinking. So even sometimes when we're talking, if I get like off track, like even just now, what was the question?
Yes. So we were talking about you said the church can send the message that you should be okay, that there's no space not being okay because we have God and the Bible and all that.
Yes. Thank you. Now I'm back on track. So like, I think, even in this recent battle, I mean, and I just to give, finish that, I've had a few clean scans in a row, and
that's amazing.
So even though you know, typical survival for this is only a year or a year and a half or something, I'm praying for 20 years. I'm praying, you know, there's no reason technology, you know, I mean, God can do anything. God could just wipe the cancer away. I believe in a God who can do anything, but as I've been wrestling with that, I've had to kind of go, what am I promised and what am I not promised? And what I'm promised is God's presence. You know, what I'm promised is I'll never leave you or forsake you. You know, I'm promised I'll be with you always at the end of the age. I'm not promised healing per se. And so I've had to wrestle with what can I claim, what can I not, you know, and kind of, what is my assurance and what is am I just gonna have to wrestle with? And then tell me the question one more time.
The church sending the message that you should be
you have to be okay. Yeah, okay, thank you. So I feel like growing up, so our church is, you know, part of the restoration movement. My family's seven generations Church of Christ, all the way back to Alexander Campbell and his church, and it's a very sort of proof text. We have the solution, you know, even the you know, we're in the middle of a big cultural shift in our country, and this is your expertise, Michael, but you know, where I think this modernism is all about, you can, here's the formula, right? Or here's the problem, here's the solution. And, but that life isn't really like that. And the Bible is not like that. And there's a lot of time that truth is intention. There's a lot of time that truth is better held in a story. I think that's the whole point of the Bible, is you get a truth better, you get truth better through story than through just this A equals B, you know, or A plus B equals C or whatever. But I come from a tradition where there had to be a solution. There's a scripture for that. There's a problem there. Here's the problem that we can fix it. And so even just like, I don't think we meant to do that, but I feel like the message I received kind of growing up from church was, it's not okay to not be okay. Like there should always be a way to get better, or there should always be a solution. There should always be, there's a reason for it, you know? And it's not unlike, you know, this, who sinned, this man or his parents, that Jesus is asked, you know, like we want solutions, right? But just a lot of, I mean, that's the story of Job, is a lot of times it's like, well, we don't know, you know, I mean, can you build a better universe? No, I can't build a better universe. And so, I've especially this year, as I've had to spend a lot of time recovering from recovery from cancer, I can't do the things I normally would do. I can't, I'm kind of in exile in a way, you know, I'm in, and then there's a lot of lament and a lot of, with my, this death sentence that I have, you know, that brings lament. It brings, having to a mourning, like a time of mourning, you know, that my wife is in, that I'm in, and it's a daily struggle. So, what I'm learning is that it's okay to not be okay. It's damaging to tell someone. It's damaging to give the message like, you should be okay. Like, when sometimes there's not an easy answer for something. I think for some, especially when it comes to sickness and death and illness. And so I feel like even through this cancer, God has opened my eyes even more to the plight of the marginalized, the plight of people who are not seen, the plight of people who are suffering, who are hurting, who are mourning, and yet that's what in the Bible all along, you know, it's in the Bible all along. I mean, the scripture I read this morning is just, I think Psalms, I can't remember which Psalm it was, but it was just, where are you, God? Where are your deeds of the past? Why are you not here like you used to be? Why is the temple in ruin? You know, and that's more common story of God's people. I mean, it's almost always been the story of God's people. And yet for some reason we think that we can solve it and fix it and make it right. And so anyway, I'm sorry for giving long rambling answers.
Not at all, dude.
In my post surgery brain, everything is connected, and then I go to this and there. And so thank you for getting me back on track a couple times.
No, don't.
But I feel like we do have to build a culture where it's okay to not be okay, or it's okay to sit in the back row for a while.
Yeah.
Or it's okay, you know, whereas it used to be like, oh, you're in sin, you're in the back row, you need to sit in the front row. You know, our culture was one where you got to be big and loud and good and awesome, and everything is always awesome. You know, everything is not always awesome, right? Sometimes we struggle and we suffer and we hurt, and that's why that's who Jesus is, right? As he enters our suffering, he enters our humanity, enters our pain. And that's so much better, I feel like, than we have all the answers and we can fix everything.
Yeah.
You know, but we're still dealing with that. We're reckoning with that. I think our kids are reckoning with that. We were talking before the podcast started about our kids. You know, I feel like our kids are reckoning with this culture of we have to be okay, and sometimes we're not okay, you know?
Right. So, no, that's so spot on, and I think helpful. And it takes me back to when I was, you know, I had this class a few years ago, and the professor was this amazing guy, David Howard. And he wrote the study notes for the NIV study Bible for the Psalms, you know, like he was that level of teacher with the Psalms and stuff, and was on several translation committees for the Psalms and Bible translations and stuff. And so I got the privilege of having like two classes with him on the Psalms, and he had us read, you know, we had read a ton of stuff on the Psalms, but one of it was Walter Brueggemann. And Brueggemann has this framework for the Psalms where he breaks them down into Psalms of orientation, disorientation, and reorientation. And Psalms of orientation are like the, you know, oh, how awesome you are, God, and how majestic is your name, and, you know, blue skies and rainbows, and everything is big and awesome and amazing, and life is going good. And there's a time for that, and that's good. And I think what Brueggemann points out, though, is as good as that is, if you tell people that's the only reality, that can actually become very abusive. It makes people feel invisible or lesser than or in sin. It starts to look down on the other two realms, which, so then there's disorientation, right? And Psalms of disorientation are like, God, what are you doing? Like, my life is in shambles. Where are you? Why are you hiding from me? Probably my favorite one is Psalm 88, where it's like everything is in the pit. And then he ends the psalm with, darkness is my closest friend. Like, there's no resolution. Exactly. It's like, this is...
I just read that like 2 days
ago. Yeah, I mean, he's clearly sitting in depression.
Yeah,
and
darkness is my closest friend.
We've all been there.
I've been there.
Yeah, yes, I've had those days. And so, but he's wrestling with it. And there's no sense that's like, you're bad for being there. Now, that's not the ultimate place you want to sit. It's not held up either. It's like, but the Psalms of, you know, they always point to, I want to get back to that point of praise, but I have to go through this. I have to be realistic about this. And like you said, sometimes, you know, it's presented as a lack of faith, but sometimes the most faithful person in the room is the one that did everything they could to just wake up and get out of bed that morning. And, right, you know, they drug themselves into the fellowship and they're going through some stuff and they're wrestling with God and they're wrestling with their faith, but they're there. They can't even pray at that point because they're just so beaten down. And we can, you know, if you're just stuck in this reality of orientation, you can look at those folks and say, you know, something's wrong with them, but the Bible never does. And then the last category is reorientation. And you see those Psalms where it's like, my life was in shambles, but you, God, you were there with
right.
me. You, it's a testimony. You walked with me, and I'm right. getting it back together. And so I think understanding all three of those as faithful walks with God helps us to be seen. And the last thing I'll say here is that Brueggemann mentions is that we live in a world that has so much that is wrong and outside of God's plan, that if we're just a community of orientation, it starts to, you know, it seems very exciting at first, but it starts to wear very thin and become disengaged from the world, irrelevant almost. And that he even goes to the point of like, how I'm kind of using my own language to sum it up, but how monstrous is it to be a community of orientation in a world that is so besought with sin, that what really is called for is to be a community of lament. And I think that's what right. Jesus meant in the Sermon on the Mount when he said, blessed are the mourners, is
exactly.
not that we're all depressed all the time, but that we are a community that knows how to lament, that knows how to sit with those who suffer, and as Reggie just said, to stand underneath that with them.
Right.
So yeah, that's really good. Anything else there, guys?
Well, and what you just said reminded me of, I think, where we ended off last time, or we were talking about last time, but just the story of Hagar, and you know, that she says to you are the God who sees me, you know, to God. Like she gives God a new name, and this is the slave, the slave of Sarai, and you know, she's mistreated. I mean, so terribly, like, you know, they're not getting what they thought they were promised. So they're trying to do it their own way. And so, it's one of those things where, like, feel like I didn't even see her or understand her story or until maybe, you know, going to Bible college, you know, a few years back, 8 years ago or something. And just, because of the church culture of everything, it's sort of like Abraham's got to be a hero, right? Or something instead. Right. No, Abraham's terrible. Like, this is terrible what happened to this person. And, but even so, God himself, the angel of the Lord, like, is there, and she's able to say, you see me. Like, she gives God a name of, I can't remember the name, but, you know, you are the God who sees me. And so things like that, stories like that just comfort me so much when I do feel like nobody else sees or nobody else can understand or nobody else knows what I'm going through, is that we have a God that cares about that. That's just amazing, you know, when you think that God is the God that made all of the universe, but he cares about each person individually, and he hears, he makes himself available to us, and he gives us his spirit to guide us and all that. It's just, what an amazing thing. I mean, that's the most amazing thing about God, I feel like, is that he's this cosmic being, but he cares about the individual.
Wow. And
he cares about our the plight of the slave woman, you know, who everybody else is overlooking. I mean, they're in a culture where that doesn't matter at all. You know, this slave woman, she's disposable. I mean, that's what we still have, that, you know, in culture. There's this people, I think about homeless people, you know, I try to always talk to them or see them, or like, I just want to at least see them, you know, like, I want you to see my eyes, like, look at you, because they're just unseen by so many people. And anyway, I just love that God stoops down and cares about all of us, you know.
That's really powerful. That's good. Reggie, we're talking about being seen or invisible, and today you are the unseen. I can't, normally I can, you know, we can see each other, so I can see the cues of if you...
Oh, there he is.
He has appeared from the realm of the unseen to the scene. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that? I do have two more questions for you guys, but I didn't want to cut and run before, if you had anything else you wanted to mention.
No, I would just only can second what Brian said about, you know, the God who sees. And I like what he said at the end. I didn't catch every word, but I think he said, you know, the God stoops down, even though he's this big cosmic being, he stoops down to take time with us. And it kind of gave me a visual. I heard a sermon one time about when God really breathed life into Adam. And I don't even know if it's true, but the visual I heard in this sermon is like, he stoops down to the dirt, like takes a knee and just very caringly scoops, you know, this dirt in his hand and combines it into the man. He breathes on it. And there's just a certain level of gentleness and immaculate care from a creator crafting his created. And so what Brian just said with the whole stooping down piece reminded me of that, and gave me that sort of visual. Or, you know, it just makes me think, like, you know, when I play with my 14-month-old daughter right now, I get down on the floor with her, you know, I'm taking a knee, I'm getting down there to spend time with her and, you know, come to her level. And I think that's what God in Christ did. He came down from earth. He left the presence of heaven, in which there is all peace, all love, all joy. He leaves that to take on the human condition, which does not have that. And so he literally stands under the oppression of what it means and feels like to be human, in order to take us back up into the life of God, into peace, into love, into joy, into being seen. So yeah, that's, I said I didn't have anything else, just the second one Brian said, but he gave me that visual. So
Yeah.
Well, that's why we don't have a script, Reg. We're just shooting from the hip. We're just making this all up as we go.
Yeah. Hoping it sounds good.
Amen.
Well, yeah, the last thing I want to sound like is an NPR episode. So, you know, that's not my lane. So we're doing it a little different here. But let me ask you guys, okay, this is what I want to end with. Two questions, and they're kind of the opposite of each other. What are some ways, and maybe you've experienced this personally or whatever, where a church or church culture can make a misfit feel unseen? What are some specific ways, without intending to, that people can feel like, man, I'm just not connected or seen in this community? And I'll start with one here. One for me is, you know, because I think people maybe don't identify with those who don't identify with being shy or being introverted, that they can make assumptions about your motives, right? Like if you go into a meeting with others and you're really quiet, people are like, what's wrong? Are you upset? Do you not want to be here? Or people think you're aloof or whatever. And I get how it can come across that way, but we make assumptions without asking questions. And I've even had a time or two where I've had people get like upset with me and reading kind of into motives and like, oh, you think you're better than people, or, you know, you don't want to be here. And it's like, no, I'm actually just kind of dealing with some social anxiety here and doing everything I can to like stay in the room. And, you know, so it's making those assumptions and it starts to make you feel like, boy, you don't get me at all. And you really don't want to. And I'm not saying it's good to sit in that either. I think I have to then, you know, be gracious and learn to get past that and overcome that and forgive and navigate around it. But it's certainly there in a temptation, and I could see how people could get to that. So, any other ways that make us do or have made us feel unseen?
Well, I immediately think of racial things or cultural things. Not that I've experienced personally, but as I've been trying to listen more, you know, that's the first thing that comes to my mind, because I think without meaning to, you can so easily create a culture that it's like a church culture where this is the way that you're supposed to do it. But it's like, it's really a white way to do it, or, you know, so that's the first thing that comes into my mind, just because I've, you know, since 2016 or so, I've been really trying to just kind of always probe those things, you know, but when I think personally back, I think to my journey, you know, in the church, I think I had times as an introvert or not as outgoing of a person where it was sort of like we used to have this thing where the way that church would be put together was like in this pre-service huddle. You know, you come to this huddle and in that huddle, everything is put together. Who's doing what song or whatever. And I'm a song leader, you know, so I would want to do a song. So I would go to the huddle and the guy in charge would be like kind of going, you know, Brian, are you fired up? It's like, yeah, I'm fired up. Are you really fired up? Yeah, I'm really fired up. All right, maybe next week you can lead a song, you know, kind of, you know. And just because I wasn't just, and I was told, you know, you'll never be the main song leader because you're, you know, because you're kind of quiet, you're kind of reserved, or you'll never be this, you'll never be that, you never go on staff, or just things that, you know, we said to each other because there was a certain kind of expectation. Here's what it looks like to be a leader, is to be like this. And I wasn't like that. You know, I've never been like that. So it's, I've had this weird path into the ministry and then staying in the ministry for 20 years, 23 years in the ministry. It's just, it's crazy that I'm still here, you know? But, so things like that made me feel unseen or made me feel unvalued or made me feel like, if I don't fit the certain mold, then I'm not, I don't have a place here or whatever. But so the way I would react to that is just try to become more of whatever that is. So I feel like God had a way of even using that where, I mean, it's funny because I would be told that I'm not going to be the main church song leader or whatever. And then all of a sudden one Sunday, like they pass out these bulletins and it says, Brian Craig, music director. And it's like, what happened? Nobody even told me that or asked me that or I don't know. So I feel like if you just stick around, God works it out. Like God just, people who are, selfish and prideful but you do have to overlook things and there are things that can leave permanent scars or whatever. So we got to keep trying to become the community of faith that is modeled on Christ, you know, that's modeled on Jesus. And it's a diverse community that's beautiful, but we're going to hurt each other along the way, you know? So,
yeah, no, I love that, dude. They still have those pre-service huddles. And to this day, if it's that, or I'm on a Zoom call or something similar, I'm always terrified that somebody's going to go, can you open up the meeting and pray for us? And I just, it's like, and I'm not saying it's bad to do that, but I'm just like, no, that like eats against everything that I want to do right now. I will, but and so when people will be, Michael, do you want to pray? I'll be like, I will. Like, I can't lie and say I want to, but
I don't want to say I want to. Yeah, that's a right. Good one.
That's Reggie, any thoughts on that? Are you still with us, Reg?
Yes, I am. Okay. Didn't hear if you addressed me or not.
I know, Reg. We're cutting in and out, and you're doing great. Any thoughts on ways that church or church culture can make us feel unseen?
I think, I don't know if I've ever experienced this myself, but I know others that have experienced this, and it's that almost this idea that people are only associating with you or talking with you because of someone else in the ministry, specifically like maybe within couples, like you really just want to talk to the wife or you really just want to talk to the husband. But like there's only interest in connecting with, you know, one part of that couple or one part of that family, if that makes sense. So feeling like there can, I don't know if you call that favoritism or something, but I know people that have shared that type of sentiment, you know, with me, like, is there an interest in me or in me, just because of my connection with this other person?
Just to piggyback on that, Reg, I think it's okay to say this on the podcast. My youngest son has expressed that there are times now that we've moved and we're in another state and he's still going to college in the state where he's at. He's like, man, sometimes I feel like people come up to me and they ask me two things. How are your parents and how's basketball going? And he's like, otherwise nobody actually knows who I am or seems to care or ask me anything other than how are you guys doing and how's basketball?
Right.
Yeah.
And I would expect that for, you know, someone of your notoriety, Michael, like, oh yeah, you know, Michael Burns. Oh, and some of that is, you know, just like, okay, we both listened to Michael Burns' podcast, so it's a starting point of conversation. It's a relation point, you know. But sometimes, you know, there can be some of, like, people can feel like your interest is only because of your connection with this other person or with this other thing, you know? Mm. So
that's a good one to bring out, because it's subtle, but I could see where it would be hurtful. And I could definitely see it with, like, my kids or people who, you know, like, a lot of people know who I am in our little family of churches, mm-hmm. but not really outside. But, like, so my kids will try to, you know, not tell people, you know, they don't want to be like, oh yeah, I'm Brian Craig's my dad or what, you know, but then it'll eventually come out. And then anyway, so it's a difficult thing, you know? And I think, you know, where it can be worse, when you were talking, Reggie, it just, where I think can be even worse than I'm friends with you because of who you're friends with. I'm friends with you because of what you do for me. I think that mm-hmm. can really creep in. I'm friends with you because, or I'm giving you my attention because of what I feel like you can do for me. Like mm-hmm. I've experienced that a lot. I think as a leader, mm-hmm. people don't even realize they're doing it, but it's, mm-hmm. it's easy to feel used by people sometimes mm-hmm. Through the years. I'm just talking about through the years, you know, as like, you want me to solve your marriage, or you want me to do this or do that. Or you, like, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. your only concern with me is what I can do for you, or kind of, you know, you feel like a tool a little bit. You feel used kind of mm-hmm. sometimes. And that's not being seen for who you are, right? If what I am to you is what you can get out of it, you know. But I think that's just so much who we are as humans. We tend to do mm-hmm. that to each other. It's so easy to do that. So it's a good question to ask ourselves, like, am I, kind of empty ourselves and try to be like, Jesus, I need to be here for this person. What? How can I serve them? How can I give to them? How can I, instead of what do I get? You know.
Yeah. I want to share this story real quick because it illustrates what we're talking about here. So bless their souls. I'm just using this as an example, but my wife and I spoke at a San Diego. I forget what it was. I think it was like young adult conference, essentially within our movement. Right. And they asked me to speak. And obviously I'm known within our churches at this time for being a professional basketball player. About 20 minutes of my talk to mostly college age young men had to do with my journey and how I got to the point of, you know, I used to find my identity in basketball and all these different things. Now I find it in Christ. I talked about Philippians 3. Paul had all these accolades in the world, but he gets to the point where it's like, I just want Christ. All this other stuff is rubbish. And I was trying to impart to these young guys, like, you know, as much as there's a lot of things to chase, I talked about, you know, getting into God's DMs. I know some of y'all have been in these girls' DMs, okay? DMs are desires and motives. What are God's desires and motives? Get to know him. Get to know him. Get out of the girls' DMs. I didn't say it like that, but that was kind of the implication. You know, just this idea of getting to know God, and you'll find that all these things that Paul could have found his worth in, all these things that you might think I find my worth in, I don't. And so afterwards, there were four guys that came up to me, and they all had questions about basketball and what they could do to to, like, you know, get to my level or play college. And, you know, part of that is understandable, but I kind of laughed inwardly because I'm like, yeah, they didn't quite hear it. But maybe a seed was planted. Maybe they'll look back at that conversation and be like, yeah, I missed what he was saying, you know? Yeah. But I think it illustrates the point we're talking about of, like, you know, they came up to me. Yeah, I know, you know, some of them may just wanted to, you know, maybe get to know me better, but the questions were about basketball and what can I do? How did you get to where you were? So the motive behind it, at least from what your questions were, is you have this goal in mind of what you want to accomplish in basketball. I can help you get there. I didn't feel used any more than I think God typically doesn't feel used when we come to him with those type of requests, because none of us come to God initially for God. You know, I don't. So, you know, I was able to smile and be like, yeah, okay. You know, they didn't quite hear what I was saying. But anyway, yeah, that was a story that came to mind to kind of show what we're talking about.
Yeah. No, that's really good. And Brian, to your point, I had a moment like that when we had the conference in Orlando last year, our fellowship, and my youngest son was dating this girl. She was his girlfriend at the time, and she came, they were there together. And so she had never been to a conference or anything before. And, you know, most of the people there knew me, it seemed like, from either books or podcasts, and a lot of people were coming up and being really kind and all of that. And so on one of the last days there, she was like, I didn't know you were famous. And I was like, oh boy. And so then the next morning we were all flying out together. We were at the airport in Orlando together, and she said something else about like, well, it was really cool. Like, I just didn't know you were that famous. And I was like, no, I was like, Emma, have you noticed anybody in the airport looking at you, coming up and talking to me? And she was like, oh no. I was like, yeah, I'm like, you know, famous in very small, insignificant circles, like not the real world. So, but yeah, that's a whole nother conversation, how we can be treated. But that's a really good point of being treated for what we, you know, people think we can do for them and that kind of thing. So the last question I was going to ask, but we're kind of out of time here, was what are ways that can make us feel seen? And I think we'll get to that. I think in some ways, just being aware of the ways that can make us feel unseen and, you know, some of those things, but I think we'll get to cultures that, you know, foster some of that in future episodes. But I do want to give a chance if anybody has a final word before we sign off here for this episode.
I would just say as a preview, you know, I would talk more about the whole DMs thing that I mentioned from that story, about getting into people's desires and motives. You know, it's a twist and a wordplay on, you know, what's popular right now amongst social media is DMs. But, you know, it's a real thing to get into each other's real desires and motives. That's getting to the heart of who we are as people. So I would just say as a preview for what I would want to bring up.
Yeah, I would say just to tease also maybe what's coming is just, I think using the language of story, using the language of personal story, I think is helpful to me to make me feel seen. You know, like tell me your story, like that is so powerful, because like, and not just, I want to tell you my story, but I want to hear your story. Like just, I think, feel like that's the way that we can come to unity, even when we have really, and it makes our diversity that much better because we have these different stories, right? And we have these different experiences. And so like, I love hearing more about each of your guys' stories. You know, I just think the language of story is can be really helpful. So maybe we could talk more about that.
Let's do it. I think that'll feed really into the next topic, which is, do we feel heard or voiceless? So I think that'll play perfect into that, and we'll pick that up next time. Reggie, Brian, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us here, The Misfits. And we will hopefully have you back next time, and we'll keep talking about all of this stuff. Thanks for joining us.